We are proud to announce the 2019 Palisade Global Hard Asset Conference, taking place on Jekyll Island from May 16th to May 20th. Speakers confirmed include one of the most successful venture capital fund managers within the resource space, Marin Katusa, legendary mining investor Paul Matysik, former hedge fund manager Mike Alkin, and CEO at US Global Investors, Frank Holmes. All these guests, plus many more to be announced. Sign up now for more details and to be included in our special guest list. Join us in Jekyll Island. Become part of a growing number of investors who are ready to take advantage of a coming resource boom. Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. I'm your guest host, Karema Mutlu, and on today's show, we have David Skarica, editor and publisher of AddictedToProfits.net. How are you today, David?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Let's get your current thoughts on the general markets and how gold has been acting since the beginning of the year. Is gold perhaps now in a more favorable situation to begin a climb back to its all-time highs? Or do we need more volatility within the Dow Jones and the S&P 500 to push investors back into gold?
Well, in terms of the general markets, I really think that's important for gold. So, there have been times in the past where gold has kind of gone up on its own. I think in the mid-2000s, we saw that where, gold and the stock market rallied together. But I think for a lot of times in history, you need kind of action from the general markets to then influence the gold market. So just to like kind of come full circle, like just the last few years, do this very quickly. One reason that we've seen gold act so poorly, since you would think with quantitative easing and all this printing of money and zero rates, gold would have done well. But because of the way that the quantitative easing was structured, not just being straight out money printing, like say we've seen Venezuela or Zimbabwe, it's essentially money printing, and long story short, that goes into more of kind of the elitist type hands, the way they structured, these things, right? So when that happens, essentially the money went into financial assets, right? Stocks, real estate, art, et cetera. And it caused kind of this mass complacency. And of course, gold tends to be somewhat, a fear trade, right? And so essentially when that mass complacency happened, and it was actually no coincidence that in 2013, when they were going full on QE in the United States, that's actually when gold broke down. So I think that's what happened is actually they call it Fed put or suppression of volatility by central banks. What that did is essentially kind of negated the gold trade, even though, again, you would think zero rates and printing money helped it. So, of course, now we've gone where from that to the Federal Reserve actually raising interest rates and doing QT, quantitative tightening, where they're shrinking the balance sheet. And by the way, I think that may be more important than the actual raise of interest rates, because if you see the effect that, say, 0.25 interest rate hike has, it's basically equivalent to roughly $100 billion in quantitative tightening. Well, they're doing the $100 billion. I think they're going to do $50 billion a month. So that's essentially like every 2 months, you're having another rate hike. So that's something people aren't taking into account, that, okay, maybe they have stopped the rate hikes now, but that quantitative tightening is essentially almost like 5 to 6 rate hikes happening this year. And remember, we've been in that quantitative tightening since October. So on top of the rate hike we saw, we've seen in September and December, that quantitative tightening is almost the equivalent of two more. So we've really almost seen 4 rate hikes in the past 4 or 5 months. And I think that is why the market was acting so poorly in terms of that. So the market fell roughly 20%. And I think you've seen now this kind of flip by the Fed. A lot of the Fed members came out with more dovish statements. The market is really unpriced. Quantitative tightening, has really unpriced these rate hikes. And I think at some point, if the market were to drop enough, say 20 to 25%, you would then start seeing from its highs, not from current levels, from the all-time high, you would see probably quantitative, I don't know if you see QE then, but you definitely see rate cuts. You probably see the end of QT. And at some point, if the market fell enough, similar to 2002 or 2008, it'll be about 50% from its highs, you'd probably see another form of quantitative easing. So long story short, I actually think more, firstly, think of if in the next few months, the Fed signals that essentially the rate hikes are ending and tightening is ending, I think that could be enough just to send gold higher, regardless of what the equity markets do. Because if you go look at what happened in 2016 in the first 6 months, when the people thought the Fed was going to start a new tightening cycle in December of 2015, and then there was problems in China, just like China slowing now, and they stopped for most of the year, gold had a huge rally into the summer of 2016. And actually, I think the XAU and HUI rallied 150% in that time frame. So I think at the very least, you'll have something like that happen. And if you see a retest of the lows, or if this is just a bear market rally and new lows in the market, I think then you'll really see them loosen and move. And actually, ironically, because most people would think, oh, gold is going up because the market's going down, I think the big explosion in the gold shares, and maybe even the gold price, will be when actually there's a, say, a larger bear market rally or larger rally in stocks that comes with kind of an easing to it, right? Because I think that will be a sign that, you know, they're full on reversing course. And I know I said that gold didn't do well during QE, but remember in the first phase of QE coming out of a decline or crisis, that was like 08 to 2011 or so, gold did really, really well. It was actually probably one of the best performing, if not the best performing asset class. So I think if we're coming out of a recession or a bear market and when we're easing, I think that will be great for gold stocks. And I think during that rally, there'll be one of the equities that really, really outperform. And one of the reasons is because at the depths of a decline, the gold stocks will probably be trading near highs. And a lot of momentum traders, a lot of the robots, you know, the algorithms will see this, and then you'll see the money flow into the sector. And I think right now we're in this kind of hope stage for the stock market where, you know, you had the smash in the fourth quarter, kind of a rally off the lows, and people are just hoping that their stocks go higher. Like, you look at Apple, for example. This is like the most widely owned company I've ever seen. And I've been doing this over 20 years. So, you know, when I'm Canadian, and back in 1999, all Canadians owned Nortel, and everyone back then also owned Microsoft. But Apple, the amount of people that own that dwarfs what I saw in 99 with those kind of stocks. And I really think that, so what I'm saying is people are in this hope phase. If you owned Apple from 220 down to 140 at the lows, and now it's bounced to roughly 150. These people are just hoping it can go to 170 to 180 to either get out or whatever, cut their losses. And I think when you get another downward drift lower, that's when the hope ends and you kind of start the despair. But the despair phase will probably be like, whoa, you know, gold stocks are moving, so let me get into those, right? So I think that's when you see the big influx into the gold equity. So combination of the Fed not raising, loosening, and if there is another down leg in the stock market, I think that would help even more, because there'll be gold stocks, and this will be kind of like where we were in 01, 02. Gold stocks will be the only thing kind of holding out, up and breaking out.
Very good. You mentioned the gold stocks. So how do you position yourself as an investor? Do you have a basket of juniors, producers, and majors to streamline your risk? Or do you think in this cycle, gold and silver exploration plays will outperform like in previous cycles?
Well, I do a lot of venture capital, you know, and I do placements, and then what I'll do is I'll keep the warrants, you know, if I say I want to move on to use that money or liquidity for another deal. So you can do that if you're an accredited investor, but the thing is, that's probably the way to really make money, especially if you know the company, good companies and managements, et cetera. But the thing is about that is I think you're still kind of early in the cycle. I think right now what you want to do is either find junior exploration plays that have ounces in the ground, who have had good drilling results and have started to build that resource, because it's exponential, right? They build the resource plus the price of the underlying asset, you know, gold or silver, is going higher. So that's how these things explode in price in bull markets. Or you want to find companies that are near or have new production, same thing, that are increasing the size of the production, because usually mines start smaller and then, you know, they kind of increase as they get the mine going. And then, of course, more of the ore body is economic as an underlying asset price of what they're mining goes up. So I think really these larger juniors with, like I said, with ounces in the ground and some kind of resource or early stage producers, that's where you want to be at this point in the cycle. And I think also in the producers, you also want to be in the turnaround points. And there's a famous story of John Templeton. He was never really a gold investor. Actually, didn't like gold, but he was, you know, a value investor. He bought in the 30s 100 companies under a dollar that were essentially half, I think 30 or 40 of them were in bankruptcy. And his idea was, because of World War II, the U.S., and a lot of them were railroads. The U.S. was going to, you know, economic activity was going to pick up because they'd be supplying the Allied forces with arms. And a lot of the companies that did the best, and this is where I'm coming back to the gold stocks, were the ones that are basically the crap companies, companies that were in bankruptcy. And then, of course, when you go from in bankruptcy to start to making a slight profit and come out of it, that's where the exponential gains are, because your stock is priced for bankruptcy. So I think a lot of the small producers, and these would be companies kind of like New Gold or Eldorado, that have had problems, that have, you know, maybe downgraded their resources or had production problems or permitting problems, say, with a new mine, that's where you want to be. Now, of course, the risk in those companies is, you know, essentially because they are struggling, they could go under if gold prices stay low. But I remember Eldorado 20 years ago was in a similar situation. They took on a lot of debt to build the Kızılay deposit in Turkey. And the stock went from $9 to 20 cents when gold prices collapsed in the late 90s. And then it went from 20 cents to $20. This is pre the recent split, you know, over the next 12 years after that. So these are the kind of plays I like to be in on the producing side. And because, like I said, the gains are more exponential because, you know, the market is priced in all the bad news. Like Eldorado, for example, trades at 1/8 of book value, right? Whereas Newmont trades at about 1.5 times book. So like that just shows you how cheap the stock is. And then on the other side, I like stocks like, and disclosures, some of these are corporate subscribers, which just basically means they take out a subscription in the newsletter. But I like stocks like Wallbridge, which has had some excellent results. And again, those companies have good results in a bad market and go up. They're the ones that usually outperform, you know, in the next cycle. So I like Wallbridge. I like a company called Mexican Gold. I think it's one of a Palisades companies as well. I like a company called Eurosun, which is kind of one of these soon-to-be producers. Paramount Gold and Silver, which again is going to be producing in Oregon. So these are the kind of things I like, stuff that's built a resource or is going to go into production.
Excellent. Well, let's get an overview on the marijuana sector. I understand you've been bullish about the sector for a number of years and have done very well as an early investor in the space. So how does the market look to you now? Are we still in a period of new growth and opportunities for companies operating in this space? And are there still opportunities for investors?
Well, I think the problem is, okay, the first thing was, you know, and I'm Canadian, but I live in the Bahamas. And the island I live on has kind of like a lot of hippies, right? Smoke a lot of weed. And they're always telling me how great it is that Canada legalized marijuana. And I kind of jokingly tell them, try to go up there and buy it, because there's not a lot of retail stores. It was really fumbled. No one mentions this, but it was fumbled very badly, the whole launching of legalization. There's a huge supply deficit. Like I said, like in Ontario where I'm from near Toronto, there's virtually no retail stores. So it was obvious to me that October legalization date, the news would be sold, because the demand was there, but the supply and the infrastructure to make profits off it just wasn't there, right? And I think it's kind of a reflection of the guy who's the prime minister, because he's a guy who, you know, can't run a piggy bank, right? His dad was prime minister and he's kind of a trust fund baby, and so he, you know, it was bungled from the top down. But now I think you had this sell-off, and obviously it correlated with this sell-off in the stock market. And I think you can see kind of a secondary rally. And I think certain kinds of companies will lead in that secondary rally. Some companies in the sector actually aren't expensive. You know, a lot of the big names like CGC or the whatnot, they're trading at huge multiples. And I would kind of not be so inclined to play them. But what I would look for now is, I would actually look for companies that aren't Canadian producers, because they'll be open to other markets and their cost of production for the most part is much lower. Actually, I'm in a pre-IPO deal called Anahit that should trade in a few months. Is in that situation. They have distribution, the production in Colombia and distribution in the Caribbean and the Latin America. And then, or you want to be in companies that are smaller that don't have the huge valuations, either at future price to sales or just the market caps themselves. Like, I just bought a little company called TransCana, who's a corporate subscriber too. And TransCana, again, they're US based and they do some marketing and distribution stuff in the sector. And the thing has like 15 million shares outstanding and trades at roughly a dollar. So again, it's really small market cap. It's not like one of these things trading at, you know, $300 million market cap with a million in sales. So I think that's where you want to find it. You got to find the stocks, the companies that are smaller, that are maybe not just in pure production, because the cost of production in North America isn't the greatest. The margins are not the best. And then, so you want to be the producers. I actually rather find foreign producers. And the foreign producers also, by the way, don't have the hype and the markup and valuation that the Canadian companies have. Or I want to find companies that are kind of like in distribution or marketing or, in a lot of them, these markets haven't opened up yet. But when you're in, also if you do products and edibles and drinkables and stuff like that, the margins are actually much higher than flour. So, I also in terms of timing it, I think April or spring is a time frame in Canada. You want to launch a lot of the retail. So I think you could see kind of a secondary rally, which may have begun into that time frame, into, you know, the quote unquote 420 or so. And then maybe there's another sell off. I think ultimately though, what's going to happen to marijuana stocks is while you can find certain companies now, essentially I view it kind of like .com was. It's going to be a huge growth industry. The FDA is regulating to reduce nicotine levels in cigarettes in the United States by 90%. So essentially cigarettes are not going to be addictive anymore. And I think marijuana will replace that at some point. In terms of like a recreational, like a smoking habit, and when it becomes more legal in all over the states. But I think what is going to happen, like the internet stocks, the companies are going to fall in down and then fall into their valuations as they grow. Like Amazon fell 95% from 1999 to 2001, but you know its revenues were still growing. So these companies could fall 70, 80, 90%. And their revenues will grow exponentially the next 2-3 years. And then you'll find some really good value. So I would be very selective. And I think at some point you will see a great opportunity. And of course, in that 2-3 years, a lot of companies will burn through all their cash. There'll be companies going under and you'll be able to see the ones who are the winners and the losers. So if you really are bullish on the sector, you have to be selective. But I really think the opportunity is going to be there more in a couple of years when a lot of these stocks are beaten up. Like, you know, if I'm right, CGC could be a single digit company, right? And if that happens, it's probably a fantastic buy because it's going to almost kind of be the Amazon of the Canadian marijuana sector.
Let's finish the show, David, by going over anything else that's caught your attention in the markets. Anything else you wish to discuss for today?
Yeah. With the kind of resource goals theme again, one thing that I think is really interesting is you're seeing signs that the US dollar is topping. Now, I know because of all the problems going on in Europe, you know, you're in the UK where they're having the Brexit vote and you know the pound has been under pressure the last few years because of that. But everyone kind of looks at it like, oh, you know, that the US is still the least dirty shirt, as they say. But I really think that if you're making this move away from tightening and then away from quantitative tightening, from QT, and you're going towards easing, well, I think what's going to happen is you're going to see the dollar begin to roll over because the U.S. is tightening more than other countries. That's one reason the dollar is strengthening. And if that dollar rolls over, you could actually see something, even if there's a bear market in stocks, more similar to the early 2000s than 07, 08. In 07, 08, it was just kind of a massive margin call and everything sold off. But in the early 2000s, when the dollar kind of peaked out in late 01, early 02, The bear market still had about a year left, but the resource stocks and resources all started to do really well as the dollar rolled over. And the one thing that's going to really weigh on the dollar is what quantitative easing did in the States more than any other countries, create these credit bubbles in terms of corporate debt and especially government debt. And I'll finish off on this. And this is the one thing where I think could weigh on the dollar is people think that U.S. can do whatever they want because of their reserve currency. But right now, if you and Jeff Gundlach, the largest bond manager in the world, talks about this, if you go actually look at the deficit, they're reporting as of roughly 900 billion to a trillion, which is still bad, 4.5 to 5% of GDP. But actually, if you look at the increase in the debt, it's 1.3 to 1.4 trillion, which is about 6% of GDP. And because they use all these accounting gimmicks, like if there's natural disasters and they have to spend government money to fix those, they say it's a one-time expenditure. But we know there's natural disasters every year, so it's really not a one-time expenditure. So anyhow, at 6% of GDP, remember, everyone went crazy when Italy wanted to run a 2.4% GDP deficit. France is at 3.5% because Macron is trying to appease, the yellow vests. So in the U.S. is at 6. So I think that's going to really weigh on the dollar. And this is also at a time when a roughly $2 trillion of corporate debt is going to expire and have to be rolled over by the end of 2021. So I think you're going to, that $2 trillion is American companies' debt. So I really think you're going to see this pressure on the dollar due to this kind of credit bubble they've created. And one reason the U.S. markets outperformed everything, and this is where you live by the sword, die by the sword, is because this credit bubble fueled the stock market bubble. And while you have credit bubbles all over the world, it was really, this one was really epicentered in the U.S. And now that's kind of unwinding. And I think ultimately that actually could put pressure on the dollar.
Well, many thanks, David. We appreciate you coming on to the show today, and we'll speak to you again very soon.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Think you understand the junior mining sector, and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip-your-face-off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?